And Prabhuji, I will read after half an hour or 40 minutes, something like that.
Okay, okay. What about Aritra? Yeah. You will be able to read or what? Aritra Prabhu, you will be able to read? Are you there?
Prabhuji is there.
There, but not answering. I think you have started recording. Mataji, you have started the recording, no?
Yes, Prabhuji, started.
Okay. ओम अज्ञानदीपनंदस्य ज्ञानजलशलाकाय चक्षुरुं विनिदं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओके सो आई जस्ट वांटेड टू ask you, I have already discussed in detail with Rajiv Prabhu, Swati Mataji and Nirvika Mataji, but Aritra and Ujwala Mataji would like to ask you about the class by Maharaj. How did you feel? How was your experience? Ujwala Mataji, can you share your experience?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Actually, that day I was talking to Aritra Prabhu also. Somehow after a long time, the lecture, it touched my heart. And Prabhupada disciple and listening to his lecture live and such a simple way they are giving the philosophy, no complication. It was directly like, no, anybody could absorb like whatever they were giving. Felt really happy, Prabhu. And yes.
Okay. Any particular point you liked the most?
Yes, Prabhu. Like, one second.
Madhuri?
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yeah.
One second. Because there was another. One second. Yeah. Yes, Prabhuji. Actually, that class, Prabhu Maharaj told like, it's japa is coming in the way of my life. Normally, people think. And he told, now my life is in the way of japa. Like we cannot, we should, our japa or our chanting should not be like parrot like saying Hare Krishna, not like that. We should have that faith and lavalyam should be there. So the preeti is the essential quality of our chanting or our, in our devotional service. That's what.
Yeah, I mean, that was shared by Mahatma Prabhu. And I think you all will be happy to know that we'll be inviting Mahatma Prabhu also in Srila Prabhupada Leela class. So
Haribol.
I have a plan to invite more Prabhupada disciples once in a month. And so next month I'm trying for His Holiness Bhanu Maharaj.
Haribol. That will be really nice.
Yeah. Haribol.
Yay. Haribol.
His Grace Mahatma Prabhu. And I will also try to invite His Holiness Shivram Maharaj. I don't know if it is possible, but I will definitely try to invite him. Okay. So, Aritra, what about your experience?
I'll be very honest. When Mataji reminded me, then I remembered those. But otherwise, there is nothing that I remember from the class. And the reason is, are you hearing me?
Yeah, I can hear.
Yeah, and the one reason is that I was just a little too caught up with the, seeing who is joining, who is leaving, and switching between Facebook and Zoom. So I don't remember much. I liked the class, but if you ask me, what did you like about the class? I guess I will blank out. And I was hoping, Mataji, that link to the class, was that, did you share that link?
No, Prabhu, actually I have to. And it is there in Facebook, in your this thing, no? I could.
Oh, yeah, it's right. Yeah. Actually, yeah, it's probably sometimes easier, just to see on Facebook, yeah. But, I'm very hazy about what I heard that day. And I was, I think, just too absorbed in seeing the way Maharaj is speaking and, seeing who all are there, who's leaving, who needs to be unmuted.
Yeah.
Not a lot of things registered that day. And it's not that there was any problem on Maharaj's side. The problem was on my side. I was trying to my heart to focus, but I think, if I think very carefully, then I'll be able to think of some of the points Maharaj made. One thing that he was telling us about, I think, about something about death. Some of the questions that were asked, like, at what point does Krishna manifest in the mind of a devotee who is about to leave? That part I was hearing, and I liked the way Maharaj was responding to that. But then also there is one thing that Maharaj said, where he said that these things we don't need to worry about too much.
No, he was talking like what will happen when we go, while we were going back, if we don't get Raganuga and all. He was telling Prabhupada is a general resident of Goloka, so just follow him, that's it. Nothing else is required for you to think of.
I can't hear you all. Maybe there's a problem with my headset.
Okay, I'm able to hear Aritra and Mataji clearly.
You all can't hear me, right?
No, I can hear.
We can hear.
No.
Okay. Okay, so this is what you want to say or anything more? Aritra Prabhu, not able to hear you. Not able to hear Aritra. Others are able to hear Aritra?
No, can't hear.
No problem.
Yeah, not able to hear.
Yeah, I think there's a problem with my headset. Okay, anyways, we'll...
Now we can hear. Now we can hear.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's a problem with my headset. So I was saying that it didn't register much. And it's not a problem on Maharaj's side. It was like I was a little too distracted by, switching between Zoom and Facebook. And I didn't really hear. I mean, I can't remember much from that. From the discussion.
Okay.
I have to really think hard, but yeah, I don't remember much from that. And that one question I was telling you, which you asked Maharaj about at the time of death, when does Krishna actually manifest in the mind of a devotee? So Maharaj was explaining, but then at one point he said that these things will be, you don't need to worry about much. So that was. That is the one thing that I remember. But otherwise, not much feedback from my side.
Yeah, okay. Okay. So I have discussed this elaborately in our CC class with other devotees. And the discussion is basically about, I just commented on some few points, like, Maharaj mentioning that we can go back to Godhead. We have to chant very attentively. We have to be, we have to practice very seriously. And there was another statement by Maharaj, which was apparently contradictory to what he said earlier. So if you remember, Maharaj quoted Sridhar Swami, who is the original commentator of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that was a very striking point. Maharaj quoted Sridhar Swami, and he has commented in the Bhagavatam that just by being alive in Krishna consciousness, you can inherit the property of the father. So we had an elaborate discussion in our CC class about this point, that how do we understand both of these points, because the verse in the Bhagavatam, Tatenu Kampasu Samikshamano, which is a prayer by Brahma to Lord Krishna, it does not mention anything about the sadhana. It does not mention anything about the limbs of bhakti. It is just saying that you just have to tolerate provoking situations and you have to keep continuing to worship Krishna with a humble attitude, thinking it's a token reaction of my karma, and keep paying obeisances to the Lord. It is only speaking about that much. And I was sharing with devotees that this is not even necessarily for devotees. I mean, those who are practicing sadhana bhakti, even outsiders also, they have this kind of faith in the Lord. Like we see many outsider, many non-devotees also, so-called non-devotees, we can say, that they do not worship the Lord the way we are doing it in terms of continuous practice, in terms of regular schedule, and in terms of following the instructions of Guru or being connected to a parampara or a Guru, right? So this verse can actually also apply to those kind of people, because there is no mention of sadhana in this. There is no mention of surrendering to Guru. So one important point I shared is that I think when Sridhar Swami is quoting or he's sharing this particular statement, I think it is assumed that we don't commit offenses. At the same time, we are connected to a parampara. We are practicing bhakti according to the standards of scriptures and according to the standard of Guru Sadhu Shastra. Then I think it is quite reasonable to say that just by being alive in Krishna consciousness, we can inherit the property. I just read one very interesting thing. And this is, I think, a conversation between Prabhupada and his disciple. So Prabhupada, in this reference, in this context, Prabhupada was saying that if a father has if the parents, they have daughter, then daughter does not inherit the property of father. Only the son inherits. Okay. So in that sense, completely, you can say, because normally it is believed that the daughter will get married and then she is no longer the responsibility of the father. She is the responsibility of the husband. Okay. But the son is going to continue that legacy and definitely is going to inherit the property of the father. Right. Now, obviously, here also we assume that the son is loyal to the father and the son is having good relationship with the father. The father is satisfied with the son, right? There is an assumption here. So similarly, we can extend this analogy and we can say that we may assume that a devotee is not offending the Lord or the devotees. And at the same time, the devotee is also practicing sadhana bhakti. Okay, which basically means he is connected to the parampara, he is trying to surrender to the process, and he is regularly performing devotional service. And that's how we also refer to the Anya Bilasita Sunyam Jnana Karma Anabritam verse, Anukulena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. So in that verse also we see that this Anushilanam is very important, because Anushilanam actually means continuous devotion. This is very important. So this is one of the things that I shared in the class. I think you can just refer to the recording. It was like, I think I had shared many other important points also. So if any devotees would like to hear the class, they can refer to the recording. I can share that in the group also. But any comment or question on this? Anyone has any question or comment about this? Yeah, so spiritual life, or especially going back to Godhead, I think it's a very complicated thing. It is not so easy to understand. You know, some, like as I've mentioned earlier also, that devotees who are less advanced, they may go back to Godhead, and devotees who are more advanced, they may continue coming back to the material world. Maybe for service, or maybe to intensify the prema. So it all depends. It's a case-to-case situation. We cannot generalize this principle, because the Shastra itself is talking, it is giving examples which are extreme examples. And Prabhupada said many things about this topic. You know, he has also given extreme understanding of this, and he has also, I mean, the opposite understanding of that. The one understanding is that Prabhupada, it shows that Prabhupada is extremely merciful, and he's saying that just by chanting 16 rounds, following regulative principles, go back to Godhead. That is what he's saying. And on other hand, he's saying that unless and until you are free from even a tinge of material desire, you cannot go back to Godhead. So we have statements by Prabhupada, which are also, which also seem to be a bit contradictory. And I think it all depends on case to case, finally. And there are many, many general statements by Prabhupada where he says that give your life to Krishna and you go back to Godhead. So where he's actually expecting from the disciples a higher standard of surrender than just to chant 16 rounds and following the regulative principles. Yeah, now another thing about the Raganuga Bhakti and what Maharaj said, you know, specifically in ISKCON, actually nobody talks about it so much. And when they are asked about it, they will not answer it, because I think for two reasons. Because Prabhupada never answered about it so much, or he never emphasized this point so much. And you know, it can be because of humility also, or it can be just by having some kind of faith in the process. I mean, it's not necessary that each and every devotee will go through this experience, or they will experience that Krishna will reveal all these details. And so now it is again, you know, because this is a bit, it's a higher topic. So I think not everyone will be comfortable to answer these questions. Even if they know that some disciples or devotees were revealed certain things by the Lord, there was some revelation from the Lord, but they will not share it openly, because these things are not meant to be shared. So that may be one of the reasons. And the second thing is that maybe devotees have not yet realized their Swarupa, or things have not been revealed to them. Because I have seen that there is a trend amongst many disciples of Prabhupada. There is a lot of variety also in the way they are handling this question and they are answering this question. So you'll see that over a period of time, when you come across Prabhupada disciples or senior devotees, they will answer you in a different way. And you'll see this variety, you know, when we also invite devotees, senior devotees, and if you are fortunate, we get their association also online, and you'll see that variety. So it's not necessary that everyone speaks about it. But I think the point by Giriraj Maharaj, well, what he said, that we don't have to worry about it. So our superiors will take care of it. So that's a very important point. And I think that is also part of pure devotional service, that we don't bother about it so much. We are only concerned with service. We don't have to focus on these things. Although we may have the greed, we may cultivate this greed also. But ultimately, whether it will be revealed to us or not, that finally depends on Guru and Krishna. So, for those devotees who have got some revelations like this, they are very fortunate, and probably it's a very good thing. But for those who have not be, you know, yet it's not revealed to them. Maybe, you know, there is time it will be revealed to us, or maybe, as Maharaj said, that it's not necessary in this life it may be revealed, but after the reaching the goal, it may be revealed to us. So this is the thing. Okay, so we can, well, actually today I wanted to answer some very important questions. I just felt that, you know, because I just went through these questions and I felt that I have to discuss these questions in our group. So let's see how much time we are going to get for reading Prabhupada Leela. But I feel that all of us should know how to address these questions. So is that okay? Like, is that fine?
Questions.
Yes.
Okay, so let me read. Let me do one thing. Let me go through the questions. I will read all these questions. And then you let me know whether we would like to continue with the questions or whether we would like to continue with Prabhupada Leela as usual. Okay. So one question is, can someone rise to bhava from any stage of bhakti? That's the first question. Then second question is, is Diksha Mantra meditation and meaning for Rag Bhakti, Vaidhi Bhakti or both? Second. Why do Krishna's childhood pastimes specially bring about Krishna Prem more quickly than his later ages? The third question. How could Yamraj have simultaneously been as Vidura and Yaksha who have tested the Pandavas? The fourth question. What is the significance of initiated japa beads? Fifth question. How can there be two different versions of Radha's life after Krishna left Vraj? Sixth, the relative locations of Goloka, Vraj, Shvetadeep and Dwarka. Seventh, does a devotee who takes reinitiation declare his fallen guru to have been a Vaishnava? Eighth, okay, yeah, so these are the questions. Would you be interested to know like some of these or all of these or none of these?
As many as possible, probably.
Okay. Yeah, other devotees?
Yes,
yes, yes.
Okay, okay.
Yes, true.
So where do we start from? Okay, let me start from this question, because I think that is... Okay, how could Yamraj have simultaneously been as Vidura and Yaksha who tested the Pandavas? Okay, before addressing this question, I would like to share one thing that just recently I also got to hear from His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj. And if you remember, we were discussing about the position of Srila Prabhupada. And I had asked this question to a couple of devotees, Prabhupada disciples. So one, I think I have shared what response I got from Giriraj Maharaj, what response I got from Drut Karma Prabhu, Mahatma Prabhu, Brahmatirtha Prabhu, Jananivas Prabhu, and I was waiting for a response from Shivram Maharaj. So Shivram Maharaj also had the same conviction, which we all have, is that these things are a bit critical, and in fact, they are also dangerous to doubt and to filter what Prabhupada must have said, to discriminate what Prabhupada said, which is in line with Guru Sadhu Sastra, and what Prabhupada said, which is not in line with Guru Sadhu Sastra. That's a bit dangerous thing, because if we go on, if we continue with this thing, with this kind of mentality, then we'll come across many statements of Prabhupada which we may not be able to understand at that particular time. And we may end up thinking that Prabhupada was just trying to connect us, and it was not, it's not real. Or, he's just trying to satisfy our senses, because that is what the senses can perceive. If there is something which cannot be perceived beyond the senses, then it is very difficult for us to accept. So if something is beyond my senses, then I say that this is what Prabhupada, and because none of the acharyas are saying that, we may think that Prabhupada is just saying in order to connect us or connect our senses. Okay. And especially with context to the cosmology section. So Maharaj also said this point, that if Prabhupada said something that we didn't understand, or it didn't strike us, or it didn't harmonize with us, then I think I would take more time to understand this and probably try to become more Krishna conscious. So what he was saying is that the ability of the senses to perceive something, it connected to the consciousness. The more we are advanced, the more spiritual knowledge is revealed to us. And he was also mentioning that Sukhdev Goswami also, he was speaking from a transcendental platform, and this is the result, the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam is the result of that transcendental realization. So it is not within our senses to accept it. It is beyond our senses. So we just have to have faith, and we have to accept it. And if you are not able to digest it, or not able to be convinced with it, then we have to wait for the time when we become more Krishna conscious, when we advance more, and then probably we'll be able to do it. But it's amazing at the end what he said that faith in Srila Prabhupada is Krishna consciousness. He ended like that was really very striking. So he said this point, that faith in Srila Prabhupada is Krishna consciousness. Okay, so now the more we doubt what Prabhupada gave us, the more we get away from Krishna consciousness. That's the conclusion of this. One thing Maharaj did mention, that Prabhupada was finding it difficult to somehow relate the fifth canto cosmology with us, because maybe, he himself is not an astronomer or a cosmologist. So, how does he communicate to us? Or how does he represent? And another thing is that he has created a movement, and all the devotees, they are fledgling devotees, inexperienced devotees, and they are very new devotees. The movement has just begun. So now, when Prabhupada definitely is, he was a chemist, so obviously he knew science very well, but we don't have scientists like Richard Thompson, who is Sadaputa Prabhu, or Drut Karma Prabhu, who is Michael Cremo. And then we don't have geologists like Brahmatirtha Prabhu, who is Bob Cohen. So we didn't have such kind of devotees who could actually decipher what the cosmology, how it can be communicated to the layman's language, to the non-devotees, or to the devotees also who are just joining. So we can definitely understand that Prabhupada had a time frame, and he had many, many things, many tasks to be accomplished. And if you see, within a span of 12 years, he has achieved a lot of success. I think it's very difficult for anyone to achieve that in a short span of 12 years. What Prabhupada established, it could have actually taken longer. So we see that Prabhupada didn't have the time to present it to the scientific community or to the devotees. And that's why he wanted the, you know, he gave the responsibility to Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj and to his scientist disciples to present this cosmology. So one thing is that Prabhupada was finding it difficult to present this to the in a layman's language to outsiders. And but obviously Prabhupada didn't say that I don't know cosmology, or I'm not, I mean, if he didn't know cosmology, he wouldn't have commented about it. So that's obvious. Okay, because, and another symptom of an acharya is that the acharya is free from the four defects, which a human being, you know, like us, jivas like us, conditioned jiva like us, we are actually subjected to the four defects. But acharya is not subjected to these four defects. Okay, he is beyond that. So definitely, if Prabhupada gave something to us, and if it is not perceivable to us, and see, another interesting thing is that not every acharya has given commentary on the way Prabhupada has given commentary with context to the material world in this particular generation. Okay, you will see there are commentaries by Vishwanathaka Thakur on the fifth canto, but they are not so detailed. Okay, and there are commentaries by other acharyas also, but they are not detailed. Now, the one of the acharyas from the Ramanuja Sampradaya, his main service was to actually delve deep into this topic and find out how the cosmology is looking like. So he presented, and he's one of the acharyas who has actually contributed in a major way in cosmology area. He's one of the Ramanuja Sampradaya acharya. But our Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas, we see that they have not commented so much in depth about Vedic cosmology. Rupa Goswami, he has explained certain things, but not elaborately. Okay. But here we see that Prabhupada had a task, he had a challenge to present each and every verse of the Bhagavatam, which can actually relate with this modern material civilization also. So it was a very difficult task for him, and he had allotted the responsibility to his scientist god brothers, disciples. And I think Sadaputa Prabhu has done a fantastic job, how he has connected Srila Prabhupada's statements with the fifth canto of Bhagavatam and with the modern science. I mean, I have not read that book personally. I had attempted to read it long time back, but I was not able to understand a lot of things. So I think I had given up that time. But maybe if I read now, maybe I will be able to understand certain things. So this is a very important principle. So I would say that His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj, His Holiness Devamrit Maharaj, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, His Holiness Shivram Maharaj, His Grace Mahatma Prabhu, His Grace Jananivas Prabhu, His Grace Dutkarma Prabhu, and His Grace Brahmatith Prabhu. So they all have the same conviction. Okay. And myself, I also had the same conviction. So I hope that devotees also, if they come across certain statements of Prabhupada which they are not able to understand, or they think that there is probably some fault in this, I think it's a good idea to ask senior devotees, get clarification from that. And there may be certain statements of Prabhupada, or there may be certain statements by acharyas which are not necessarily, it's not necessary that we may be able to understand and digest everything. Okay. And this is one of the reasons why I am actually going to address some of these questions, because there are questions which we have to accept on faith. Ultimately, we cannot go beyond that. We cannot keep reasoning and challenging, or we cannot just keep asking questions, because finally it will boil down to the matter of faith. So there are questions which will not have a technical or a scientific answer, which will be completely dependent on the matter of realization and faith. Okay, so we'll go through these questions now. Okay, now coming to the question of, okay, any comments or any doubts, any questions on this? No question, no comment. Okay. Let's start with the first question. How could Yamaraj have simultaneously present as Vidura and Yaksha? Okay. So I think we have discussed this question earlier also, just as how could there be a possibility that Nand Maharaj and Drona and Dhara, because these are the previous incarnations of Nand Maharaj and Yashoda Maiya. So how is it possible that Nand Maharaj is eternal associate of Krishna? Because we see that Nand Maharaj had a past life. In the Bhagavatam it is mentioned that they had in the previous lifetime. I mean, this was the third lifetime, and before this they had taken two births. So one as Dronadhara and then another one as Kashyapa and Aditi, and then finally in the form of Nand Maharaj Yashoda Maiya. Okay, so now see, Yamaraj is also a pure devotee of the Lord, and it is mentioned that when Yamaraj was cursed by Sandilya Muni, I don't remember the name of that Muni, but probably it was Sandilya Muni. When he cursed Yamaraj, then obviously he had to lose that post. And he had to come down to the material world. He was cursed and he came down. But Acharya also explained that Yamaraj had a desire to serve the Lord by preaching the glories of the Lord. So he came as Vidura. Right? So now who occupied the post of Yamaraj when Yamaraj was not there?
Aryama?
Yes. Yeah, so it was Aryama who occupied temporarily the post of Yamaraj.
Sorry, Pujji, Prabhuji could not hear properly.
My voice or Aritra's voice?
Both, Prabhuji.
Yeah, so I was asking that who occupied the post of Yamaraj when he was cursed. And Aditra said it was Aryama who occupied that post temporarily when Yamaraj came as Vidura.
Okay, and who is he, Aryama?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about the past life of Aryama or the present life as such, but I mean, he's just a jiva who has the qualification to take the position of Yamaraj. He has that karma to take that position. Now, we know from the Bhagavatam also it is mentioned, if you keep on doing pious activities for 100 lifetimes, then you can also take the position of Brahma. So we know that these positions, these are all designations. These are not personalities as such. Okay. These are designations. Just like Indra also, Indra has a particular name. Indra is a post. And so similarly, Manu is also a post. Anyone can actually occupy the post of Manu also. Anyone can occupy the post of Brahma also. So we know who are the 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. Now, this is in this particular Kalpa. But in another Kalpa, there will be another set of 14 Manus. And they are all different. These are all different personalities. Right? So this is a designation. It is not the jiva himself. Okay. So this we have to understand. So as such, Yamaraj is also a position. It is also a post. And Aryama is actually taking that position. Now, see, since the Lord is actually expanding himself from the spiritual world to the material world, so similarly, the devotees also, they also expand from the spiritual world to the material world. And so coming to the case of Nand Maharaj and Yashoda Maiya, I think I have explained this earlier. Anyone would like to answer? How can we reconcile both things? Because they had a past life also, and at the same time, they are also eternal associates. So how do we reconcile?
Yeah, I think Prabhuji, you had mentioned that in the jivas who are qualified from their karma of previous life, they are empowered by the eternal parshads with that special potency, and then they play the role. Something like that, right?
Yeah, so they are amshas of the Nitya Siddhas. These sadhakas, like for example, even Prahlad Maharaj and even Narad Muni. If you remember when we had discussed about Prahlad Maharaj during Narsimha Chaturdasi class. So I did mention one point that Prahlad is a mixed devotee or a mixed Siddha, which Prabhupada says is a mixed Siddha. And then Prabhupada says that like Narad Muni. Narad Muni is also a mixed Siddha because in the previous life, Narad Muni had a previous life, but at the same time in the next life, he was Narad Muni. So actually, what is the meaning of mixed Siddha? So similarly for Prahlad Maharaj also we hear that there is a past life. In the Narsimha Purana it is mentioned that how Prahlad Maharaj, in the previous life, his name I don't remember, but he fasted by default on the day of Narsimha Chaturdasi. And that's how he actually attained love for Lord Narsimhadev or attachment for Lord Narsimhadev. But at the same time, we say that Prahlad Maharaj is eternal associate of Lord Narsimha. So similarly here also, the same thing with Vasudev and Devaki also, that they are eternal associates, but at the same time, they also have their previous lifetime as Prishni Garbha and Prishni. Okay. And then obviously, they again came back in the form of Aditi and Kashyapa. So, and even if we see that in the past tense of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the same thing is happening. That there are the, you know, when Jagannath Mishra and Sachimata, they are appearing. So it is mentioned that they are the incarnations of Nand Maharaj, Vasudev, Yashoda, Devaki, Aditi, Kashyapa, all of them together. Right? So see, what is happening here is that when Krishna is expanding from Goloka to material world, he is expanding from Goloka to Vaikuntha, then from Vaikuntha to or you can say from Goloka to Ayodhya, Ayodhya to Vaikuntha, and from Vaikuntha to finally to the material world. And then he is having his associates also in all these abodes. So we have Radharani in Goloka, we have in Mathura and Dwarka, we have Rukmini and Satyabhama, and then we have Lakshmi Narayan in Vaikuntha, and then Sita Maya in Ayodhya. And then when they come to the material world, come to the material planet, they are also having expansions as the demigods. So now, so some of the expansions, so as the Lord expands, the devotee will also expand in the material world, right from Goloka to the material world. And so basically these devotees whose past life has been discussed, these are amshas of the original Nitya Siddhas. And so when they come to the material world, they act like sadhakas. When the purpose is over, they merge into the Nitya Siddha forms and then they go back to Godhead. Okay. Now, this is one concept. Another concept is that When Krishna descended to our Bhoma Vrindavan or to the Bhoma Dwarka and Mathura, so he also descended along with the Yadus, Yadavas, who are eternal associates of the Lord. When they descended in this material world, what happened, the demigods who had aspired to assist Krishna in his service, they merged in the body of the demigod, in the body of the Yadus, in the body of Yadavas. So there were demigods who had merged in the body of the Yadavas. Okay. And that's why we see the Mosa Leela of the Lord happened. Because the Lord wanted to separate the Yadu dynasty from the demigods. Actually, it's very interesting to know that when the Lord disappeared from this, the Mosa Leela, it has a very, it's very mysterious, because it seems that this entire Mosa Leela was very ghastly. It was very dangerous act, because the way the Lord destroyed the entire Yadu dynasty, you will be shocked to know that how can someone destroy his own family members. Okay, but actually, in reality, this never happened. It was an illusion created by the Lord for the materialistic and atheistic people to bewilder them. So this never happened. Okay, that's the first thing. Second thing is, so on an external level, it happened, but actually it did not happen on an internal level. And the reason was that the Lord wanted to actually separate the Yaduvas from the demigods. So before Krishna went to Prabha Kshetra and started destroying all the Yadavas, what he did, he separated the Yadava portion and the demigod portion. The demigod portion, he sent them to Prabhas. And the Yadava portion, he actually asked them to stay in Dwarka only. And he asked them to become a prakat. Because the Lord knew now that, you know, he's going to go away. He's going to disappear from the material world. So before he could go, he asked all these associates to also become a prakat. So he separated them. And so the demigod portions, actually they fought with themselves. And that's how they were... You know, they again, after dying, they went actually to their own abodes. Okay. And the Yadavas, they went back to Gwalior from Dwarka. From this Bhoma Dwarka, they went back to Gwalior to go to the spiritual Dwarka. This is the sequence of events which happened. So it was an internal, there was an external reason and there was an internal reason. Internal reason was to separate the Yadavas from the demigods. So see, this is what happened. So there are two concepts here. One concept is that the Jiva is an amsha of the original Nitya Siddha. And the second is that personalities can also merge. They can also combine in one form. And when the task is over, when the role is over, the personalities will separate and they will go back to their respective abodes. Okay, so is this clear?
Yes, Roji. Clear.
Okay. Coming back to the question of Yamraj. So similarly, this is the principle for Yamraj also or any other devotee. Because the devotee also attains unlimited potency by the mercy of the Lord. They don't have unlimited potency like the Lord, but they acquire that potency by the mercy of Lord, in order to assist in his pastimes. So a devotee also can expand himself into unlimited forms, which is obviously only possible by the mercy of the Lord. Okay. And so here also we see that Vidura is here, although he is Dharmaraj, and Yamraj is also here. And then obviously we also see Yudhishthir Maharaj as being the expansion of Dharmaraj. We also call Yudhishthir Maharaj to be the expansion of Dharmaraj, or he is the representative of Dharmaraj, who is a demigod, right? And so here we can see that three, four personalities are present, although they are all of the same category, right? So they are all expansions. When the role is over, they will again, either they will merge back in their original identity, or they will separate, you know, after merging, they will separate and they will go to their respective abodes, finish their this service responsibility, and then if they have developed love of Godhead, then they will go back to Godhead. Otherwise, in the next life, probably they will get a chance to become devotees. somehow or other, if they have come in contact with devotees or the Supreme Lord, then there is a lot of chance that they will become devotees. Okay. And so they may go back to God in this life, or probably they will go in another lifetime.
So, Prabhuji, I have a query.
Yeah.
These 12 Mahajanas, they are also basically positions, not 12 specific people.
No. That's that is not necessary. So you see that there are some devotees also, like Prahlad Maharaj is also mentioned, and that's not a post, that's not a position. And then we have the mention of Janak Maharaj. We have the mention of Lord Shiva. Now Shiv Tattva is a bit complicated, because Shiva can exist in two platforms. He can either be a Jeev Tattva or he can be a Vishnu Tattva. And so even among Shiva also, let me share something interesting, that Shiva occupies three posts. So he is actually Vishnu Tattva. As Shiva, and we understand Shambhu as someone who is in between the Jeev Tattva and Vishnu Tattva. Okay. So that's Shiv Tattva. And then there is another third category of Shiva, or one of the Rudras, who can be a Jiva also. So we have to be careful when we talk about Lord Shiva. So these are the three designations. Shiv Tattva and Vishnu Tattva. So the Jiva can never become Shiv Tattva and Vishnu Tattva. They can occupy the position of one of the Rudras of Lord Shiva, but they cannot become Shiv Tattva or Vishnu Tattva. Okay, so they cannot take the position in between the Jiv Tattva and Vishnu Tattva, or they cannot also attain the position of Vishnu Tattva. So this we have to understand. And then I think also there are the other devotees. Narad Muni is also one of the examples. So there are some of the devotees who are actually not designations, they are devotees themselves.
So it's a mix.
I think Yamraj is one of them, and
Brahma is also position.
Correct. Yeah. So Brahma is also that. Correct. Yeah. Okay. So is this clear? I mean, these are all ultimately, we say that, let me give another example. Now, this is very interesting. If you remember, in our Prabhupada Leela Club itself, we had discussed that Srila Prabhupada himself, said to one of his disciples that acharyas never go back to Godhead. They always go from one material world to another material world, preaching the glories of Lord. And when the disciple asked Prabhupada that, so does it mean that they are also in the spiritual world at the same time, they are also simultaneously present in the material world? And Prabhupada said, yes, something like that. So, another interesting thing is Prabhupada himself spoke about his guru, that, his Guru Maharaj also, when he disappeared, he told one of the disciples, he told this in one of his classes, in one of his lectures, that his Guru Maharaj, he disappeared from this planet and he appeared in other planet to, and continue the preaching. So that way he didn't go back to Godhead. So we can now understand what is the context here, that a devotee can be in the material world, at the same time he can be present in the spiritual world also. Right? Both things are possible. So similarly, many examples like this, for example, Bhishma Pitama also. Now see, if you talk about the designation, then Bhishma actually was a Vasu, one of the Vasus. So Vasu is a designation, because that's one of the particular type of demigod. So Bhishma, he got the name Bhishma because of his very strong vow. Okay, that's how he attained the name Bhishma. but he is actually known as Gangaputra. Okay, and his actually name was Devrat. So somehow he got the name of Bhishma. So Bhishma Pitama, he himself was a Vasu in the previous life. And at the same time, we also say that he is eternally associate of the Lord. So again, the same thing, you know. So it is definitely possible that devotees are in the spiritual world and they are also in the material world simultaneously. Here also we can see that acharyas, they are in the material world. They never go back to Godhead because the expansions, one of the expansions of the original personality in the spiritual world, when they expand in the material world, their only service is to increase the glories of the Lord, to spread the glories of the Lord, to preach. So we see here that Prabhupada said that Bhakti Siddhanta Sarvathakur was also one of them who never went back. Okay, he is also the acharya like that. Okay, so any comments on this?
Prabhu, actually, Mahajanas are those who know the Dharma, like, no? Even Prabhupada says, like, why Bali Maharaj is included in Mahajanas means he says, like, because he rejected a non-Vaishnava spiritual master, like that. So, there are only exclusively 12 or... I heard somewhere like Prabhupada says anybody can become Mahajana. Like, I mean, can you throw some light on that?
Yeah, yeah. See, there are obviously, see, Mahajan means what? Like now, these are the original Mahajans or prominent Mahajans in the scriptures. That is what it means. But actually, if you see, whoever is following the principle of pure devotional service is a Mahajan. And not just the 12 Mahajans, but like, you know, even Prabhupada is actually one of the Mahajans. And his guru and our parampara gurus, they are all Mahajans. So, see, you may wonder that why there is no mention of Rupa Goswami, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in that list. Okay, and there are so many other personalities also who are not mentioned. Bhishma Pitama is mentioned, but Arjun's name is not mentioned. The Gopi's name is not mentioned. Uddhava's name is mentioned? No, I don't think.
No, it's not there.
Yeah, it's not there. So these are the devotees. According to their particular service, they have become prominent for that service. Okay, and I think they have set an example in that particular service. For example, Lord Shiva has become a Mahajan because he drank poison. And if you consider on the level of Lord Shiva, no ordinary Jiva can do that. Even devotees also, they cannot drink poison. Okay, now obviously, who is greater? Shiva is not greater. I mean, you see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, what is the rank of Shiva in terms of being a devotee? So when this entire thing is going on, who is the highest devotee of the Lord? You see how it is starting. It is starting with one of the kings in one particular region. Narad Muni is searching for the greatest devotee of the Lord, the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord. He starts with one king in our material world in one particular region. But the king is glorifying that, every devotee is expressing their humility. And the king is saying that I am actually not the greatest recipient. It is Indra who is actually the greatest recipient. Then Narad Muni goes to Indra. Indra will say Brahma is the greatest recipient. Brahma will say that I am not. It is Lord Shiva. And then Shiva says that I am not the greatest. Prahlad Maharaj is actually the greatest recipient. Then Prahlad will say that I am not the one. It is Hanuman. Okay. Then Hanuman will say Arjuna is the greatest. And then Arjuna will say Uddhava is the greatest. And then Uddhava finally concludes the gopis are the highest. Okay, so they are the highest recipients of mercy of the Lord. So here we see that these Mahajans, they have performed a particular type of service which is unique. Okay, especially in the material context, in the material world, they have performed an exemplary service in a particular context. And that's how they have been given that kind of prominence. as a margin. Although there are so many, many, many devotees of the Lord who are fit to be in this category. In fact, even beyond that. Because you'll see here that none of these devotees, they are at par with the Vrajvasis. Right? Arjuna is also not mentioned in that list. Only Bhishma Pitama is mentioned. So we can actually understand that. Bhishma Pitama, why? Because the type of vow that he took and the entire life that he sacrificed for the Lord's pleasure. That's what actually gave the title, he received the title of Mahajan. So similarly, we can actually go through all the list of these 12 Mahajans and we can understand how they are in the material world, and this is specifically in context with the material world, okay? So how they have performed great services in the material world, which are unique in themselves, and which are very difficult services. So I mean, is what I can understand.
Because one question came from one Prabhuji. He was asking, all the four sampradayas, three sampradayas, Rudra sampradaya, Lord Shiva is there. Brahma Sampradaya, Brahma is there in Mahajans. And Kumaras were also there. Why not Sri Sampradaya, Lakshmi Devi is not there in Mahajans? Like they asked. Then I said, like, whatever I heard before, as you said now, it's not limited that to 12. Mahajanas are only 12. No. So I wanted to confirm whether I answered properly or not.
Yeah, yeah.
As you said, gopis were not mentioned and so many other devotees are also there during that time also. They were also not mentioned. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, they are referred to as Mahajans in the context of the service in the material world. See, if you consider so we see that Brahma is there and Lord Shiva is also there in the Sampradaya. But Brahma is also, again, he is also acting as the representative of the Lord. Shiva is also acting as a representative of the Lord, and Shiva is a service of, he has rendered a very unique service by drinking poison. And we see that when it comes to the Kumaras, there is no specific service that the Kumaras have done like that in the material world, right? So they are known, actually, they are used as an example of impersonalists who are converted to devotees. In that sense, they have that service.
Maybe they're being the perfect brahmacharis, like.
Yeah. Yeah, they are perfect brahmacharis, but in terms of serving the society, serving the material world, there is no contribution in that sense. Okay. And when we talk about Lakshmi or Sri, again, now Sri is actually the internal potency of the Lord. So, it is like, the Lord wants to glorify certain devotees and he will just glorify them like that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also used to praise certain devotees. For example, he used to praise Haridas Thakur for his humility. He used to praise Sanatan Goswami for his humility, and he used to praise Haridas Thakur for his sadhana. Why only Haridas Thakur? See, it's like saying why Haridas Thakur is only the Namacharya. So does it mean that Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, or any other Acharya, or any other Goswami, or any other great Vaishnav, he's not Namacharya? They are all Namacharya. But Mahaprabhu wanted to select and choose Haridas Thakur as an example because he wanted to show to the world that in spite of taking birth in a lower caste, he is actually the Acharya of the holy name, because by chanting the holy name, one can come to a transcendental platform. So he glorified Haridas Thakur like that. And so similarly, Rupa Goswami also he glorified in a unique way, that he is actually the one who has brought out the rasas of the Shastra. Okay. Jeev Goswami is the greatest scholar. Does it mean that he was not Namacharya? Does it mean that he didn't understand the rasas? No. Raghunath Das Goswami also, he was glorified for his vows. You know, it is mentioned that his vows were like written something, you write something on the stone, it will never get erased. Okay, so different, I think, you know, this is a general tendency of the Lord that he wants to glorify devotees according to the best, according to what service they render in the best possible way. Okay, so like that, I think, you know, it's a choice of the Lord that they will be glorified according to their service.
Okay, Prabhuji, thank you.
Okay. So let's go to the next. But obviously it's a interesting question. I've explained as much I can. I have understanding about this. If there is some more internal reason for why only these 12 are selected as Mahajans, then definitely I will share if I get to know. Okay, so what is the significance of initiated japa beads? Anyone who would like to answer this question?
Prabhu, can you repeat the question, please?
What is the significance of initiated beads? What is the significance?
So, the japa beads that are given to the disciple at the time of initiation, the spiritual master chants on it and he purifies the process of chanting, or he kind of initializes the process of pure chanting. And yeah, so that's what my understanding is. I think you mentioned it briefly before.
Yeah.
I don't have a detailed answer for it, but that's what I had picked up from a previous class.
Okay.
He's not purifying the holy name, but he's purifying that process or initializing the process of the disciples taking the vow to chant purely, attentively, under the instruction of the spiritual master.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you have mentioned rightly to some degree, but yeah, some more details. Anyone?
No, Prabhu, like it is not the beads, like Prabhu, sometimes I heard like some people, if their devotees, they lost their initiated beads and all, if they were worried, it says like it's not the beads I have initiated, like, yeah, definitely importance is there, it's given by your spiritual master, chanted on that and gave you, but we should be careful about that, but if
Yeah. So Prabhupada, if you remember, I have shared some letters by Prabhupada where Prabhupada clearly says to a disciple that it's not the beads that I purify. It's actually the mantra which is purified. In the sense that obviously the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is definitely completely pure. But what Prabhupada is saying here is that the Guru is empowering the disciple to chant the holy name. Right? He is investing his potency in the process. And he is also empowering the disciple. So basically our chanting can become it can become potent if we follow the instruction of the spiritual master and chant the holy name. If we do not commit offenses, then it will become potent because now it is infused with the mercy of the spiritual master also. Definitely the beads by Prabhupada or our guru, they are very important because anything connected to the guru, it's a prasad, it's their prasad, okay, for us. Whatever the guru is wearing or that all becomes prasad for us, and that is also a memory for us, connection, some kind of vapu connection with the guru. But definitely it's very important to know that the initiated beads in itself, they will not have purifying effect or potency unless and until we follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Like for example, it is mentioned in the Shastra that one of the most potent ways is to take the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnava or the Guru, right? But we know that probably we have got chance of taking many times this dust, but we see that there is no effect. We are not advancing. And so actually real meaning of taking the dust of the feet of the devotee is to follow their instruction finally. That is actually the meaning of that. So there are some, see, there are certain activities which are temporary, which will have effect for some time. And there are other factors which will have a prolonged effect, provided you are in touch with those activities. So now, taking the remnants of the Guru, taking the Charanamrit of the Lord, and taking the dust of the feet of the devotees, these are temporary process. These are, you can say that, there are two types of mercy. One is short-term period mercy and one is long-term period mercy. And I think these three processes, they come in the category of short-term period mercy, which means that when you do it, you are supposed to get it. You are supposed to get that kind of mercy. But when you get connected with the long-term period type of mercy, then truly you are benefited. Okay, because short-term mercy, you may get some kind of inspiration or some kind of there may be some kind of interest and inspiration to enhance our devotional service, but it cannot be sustained unless and until we follow for a long period of time. Okay. So it cannot yield the fruit unless and until we follow other parts connected with it. So in order to sustain that mercy, we have to do certain things for a longer period of time, for a steady period of time. Then only we get the benefits of these mercies. Right? So basically, even if the spiritual master has chanted on your beads, it does not mean that you have attained the goal. And that's why initiation is just the beginning. It is not the end. It is the beginning only. So now, if you chant attentively without offenses every day, then the potency of the spiritual master will always be there when you chant the holy name. If you do not do that, if you do not follow the instructions of the spiritual master, the potency will be blocked. Okay, it will be blocked. So like that. So it's very simple. Ultimately, everything is connected to the Vani. How you follow the Vani, how you take the Vani ahead. Because Vapu is a temporary form of mercy. But Vani is something which is going to carry you forward. It's a long-term mercy. Right? So similarly, here also, many devotees, if they have this conception that, there are sannyasis who have lost their chanting beads, which was chanted by Srila Prabhupada. But still, you know, they have been able to make a lot of advancement. I mean, they probably, it is, you know, it's not that it just got lost or they were not responsible for that. But in spite of changing the chanting beads also, they have been able to make a lot of advancement. And that is purely because, as Prabhupada says, that we are not the real mercy is not because of the beads. The real advancement is because of following the instructions. Is that clear? Any question or comment on this?
Clear, Prabhuji.
Okay, next question. So now it is Diksha Mantra Meditation and meaning for Rag Bhakti, Vaidhi Bhakti or both? Okay, what is the answer for this?
Prabhu, again, is Diksha Mantra?
Meditation and meaning. For Raganuga Bhakti or Vaidhi Bhakti or both?
Like, as you say, like Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is for sadhana, Vaidhi Bhakti or Raganuga Bhakti or both?
No, Diksha Mantra.
Okay.
Diksha mantra. Okay. Is Diksha mantra different for different devotees? It's a very dumb question, but I used to think it is the same.
Yeah, it is same for everyone. Okay. But is Diksha mantra for Vaidhi Bhakti or Raganuga Bhakti?
So Diksha mantra is the Gayatri, right?
Gayatri.
Actually, it is a practice of sadhana. Mantra meditation is like chanting of the mantras. Whether you are in Vaidhi Bhakti or Raganuga Bhakti, you are supposed to carry it. It's Vaidhi Bhakti maybe out of compulsion or because you have promised as an obligation or as a duty to the spiritual master, the word you have given, you will be doing. But Raganuga Bhakti with love and out of this thing, you will do it. Without obligation.
Okay, see, actually, there is a technical definition of Raganuga Bhakti also. We are not just talking about spontaneous devotion here, because Raganuga Bhakti specifically means following in the footsteps of the Vrajvasis. And Raganuga, in one form, it is referred to as spontaneous devotional service, which can be a part of Raganuga Sadhana as well as Vaidhi Sadhana. If you just stick to the definition of Raganuga Bhakti as spontaneous devotional service, then Raganuga can also refer to Vaidhi Bhakti. Why? It is very simple. Because Vaidhi Bhakti also, as you advance in further stages, then your devotion will become spontaneous. After the stage of Nishta, you will cultivate Ruchi, Asakti, Bhav. So obviously there is no force. Once you attain Ruchi, there is no force. And there is no obligation also. There is no duty involved. So that can also turn into spontaneous devotional service. And at the same time, Raganuga Bhakti itself is a spontaneous service. Because the greed is there right from the beginning. So actually, truly Raganuga Sadhana, Raganuga Bhakti means that we aspire to follow in the sentiments and the bhav of the Vrajvasis. That is actually the real definition of Radhanuga Bhakti. Spontaneous devotional, you know, why it is spontaneous? See, why it is mentioned like that, spontaneous? Because Raganuga itself is a spontaneous devotional service. When you say that, when does Raganuga Bhakti begin? You cannot say that, okay, unless and until your anartha are destroyed, Raganuga Bhakti starts from there. Actually, the qualification, so what is the qualification? Okay, let me ask this question. What is the qualification for Vaidhi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti?
Vaidhi Bhakti, first you need to have that faith. And for Raganuga Bhakti, that lavlyam, that greed should be there.
Yes, exactly. So see, Raganuga Bhakti, there is no question of faith. Faith is not the starting point. Because correct. The faith is, you are beyond faith. Okay, and Vaidhi specifically means you want to, your faith is developed with the help of scriptures. But Raganuga means it is independent of scriptures. Although you naturally follow the injunction of the scriptures and you also have knowledge about the tattva of the Lord in Raganuga Bhakti, but you don't base your faith on scriptures. So without scriptures, without external factors, your bhakti is spontaneous like that. You don't require reasoning. You don't require logic. You go beyond logic in Raganuga. So that's the starting point of Raganuga Bhakti, which means that we have greed right from the beginning. That means we have attraction for the Lord. Right from the beginning, we have attraction for the Lord. Whereas Vaidhi, there is no attraction. There is some faith. And then we follow the process. And then we get more and more attached to the process or attached to the Lord. Now, again, there is a difference between Ruchi and Asakti. There's some small difference, because actually Ruchi and Asakti, almost everything is the same. Like, you know, for example, you are attracted. You are attached to the process. But the technical difference between Ruchi and Asakti is, in Ruchi, you are more attached to the processes of bhakti rather than the Lord. Okay, whereas in Asakti, you are directly attached to the Lord. Anyways, I think we have discussed this in our NOD class. One thing we have to understand that Raganuga Bhakti is not based on external factors. It is based on greed. And it is natural, it is spontaneous. And spontaneous, obviously, because it is very natural. So there is no artificiality in that. There is no obligation in that. It is spontaneous. That's why it is called spontaneous devotional service. Although, if you really understand the meaning of Raganuga, it actually means you follow in the footsteps of the Vrajvasis. So now, coming back to Vaidhi Bhakti, that's why I said that Vaidhi Bhakti also has an element of Raganuga Bhakti. When we only stick to the definition of Raganuga as spontaneous devotional service. Right? But why I say there is a difference between that Raganuga and this Raganuga is because, first of all, Raganuga has to be in, in the wake of the Vrajvasis. And second thing is, the attraction and attachment is very strong in Raganuga Bhakti. Whereas in Vaidhi Bhakti, it is weak. Even if you are in spontaneous devotional service at later stages or higher stages in Vaidhi Bhakti, but that attachment is weak. Why? Mainly because you are worshipping the Lord in Aishwarya Bhav. You are worshipping the Lord with awe and reverence. That's why that attachment is weak. It is not strong as Raganuga. So, now coming back to the original question is, the Diksha Mantra, when we meditate on the Diksha Mantra and when we try to understand the meaning of Diksha Mantra, what does it refer to? No answer? Okay. So see, Vaidhi and Raganuga, the Diksha Mantras, they can refer to both of them. It all depends on the conception of the chanter. If the chanter is attracted to Lord Ramchandra or to Vishnu, then the Diksha Mantra can, if you meditate on the Diksha Mantra, then it will lead you to Vaidhi Bhakti. And if you meditate, and if you want to, if Krishna and Radharani are your destination, your goal, then that Diksha Mantra can reveal Raganuga Bhakti, or it can lead to Raganuga Bhakti. Because see, anyways, the Gayatri Mantra, if you see, that's a Brahma Gayatri. Okay, we have the Brahma Gayatri, we have the Guru Gayatri, we have the Gaur Gayatri, and then we have some Gopal Mantras also. So now we'll see that. And then we have the Kam Gayatri also. So Kam Gayatri is definitely connected directly to Krishna. Past tense of Krishna in Braj. And then we have the Gaur Gayatri also. Obviously, we know that these are also connected to Braj and Radha and Krishna. And then we have the Guru Gayatri also. And then we have the Brahma Gayatri also. Now Brahma Gayatri is definitely conceptual, because depending on your conception, you will be awarded that destination. So Brahma Gayatri can refer to the merging into Brahman effulgence. It can also mean liberation from the material world, attaining the position of Brahman, and it can also mean to attain a place beyond Brahman, which is the spiritual world. And then obviously you can also refer to as Lakshmi Narayan. It can also refer to Radha and Krishna. So the Acharyas, they have given the highest meaning of Brahma Gayatri, which is Radha and Krishna worship. You may think that Brahma Gayatri is connected to the worship of Surya Narayan, but Surya Narayan is actually, you know, obviously depending on the conception, the devotees will perceive Surya Narayan as different expansions of the Supreme Lord. So in this particular context, it, you know, for the devotees of Krishna, it can refer to Lord Krishna. Okay, so depending on the conception of the chanter and the destination they want to achieve, this Diksha Mantra can lead to our different destinations. Right? Now, see, along with this Diksha Mantra, we have Hare Krishna Maha Mantra also. So here we have Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and in Gayatri we have Kam Gayatri also, and we have Gopal Mantra also. So now, if someone is a devotee of Lord Ramchandra or Vishnu, then how will they perceive this Kam Gayatri and Gopal Mantra? Again, they will see the words Hare Krishna Rama, or any word which is connected to Krishna and his potencies, they will see as the manifestation of that particular Supreme Lord. So here, Hare can actually mean the potency of, if someone is a devotee of Rama, then they will think, perceive Hare as Sita and Krishna as Rama. And then obviously Ram is definitely there. So Hare Krishna Rama, they can actually refer to Sita and Lakshma, Sita and Ram and Lakshman also. Okay, it can probably, if someone is a devotee of Lakshman, they can probably also perceive Rama as Lakshmana and Krishna as Rama, like that. So it all depends on the conception of the chanter. And someone is a devotee of Vishnu, then they will perceive as Hare Krishna Rama, as all the names of Hari. Okay, or the potency of the of Lord Vishnu, Lakshmi, and Lakshmi and Narayan. So that's why, see, you can attain lower goals from the highest goal. Like for example, if you want to go from let's say from, I mean, I Okay, if you're familiar with the Mumbai stations, then, you know, if you want to go from Andheri to Churchgate, so in between you can get down at Bandra also. Although you have a ticket for Churchgate, you can get down at Bandra also. You can get down at Mumbai Central also. Okay, these are stations in between Churchgate and Andheri. So the highest, if you purchase the highest ticket, ticket for the highest destination or the longest destination, then you can get down in between. But if you purchase ticket for the lower destination, you cannot go beyond that. So those who are devoted, so that's why this Hare Krishna Mahamantra is the highest form of the Mahamantra. And the Gayatri that is given to us is also the highest form of the representative of the Lord. But depending on your conception, you will perceive differently. And you can attain that goal. Okay, but you cannot attain Krishna if you chant the name of Lord Rama, or if you try to cultivate attachment for Lord Ramchandra, then you cannot attain Krishna, because Rama is an inferior form of the Lord. And so similarly, Lakshmi Narayan also is an inferior name. And we know from Vishnu Sahasranam that one name of Rama is equal to 1,000 names of Vishnu, right? So that's why you, by giving a lower form, inferior form, you cannot attain the higher goal. And that's why, it's very interesting that we do this samsara prayers every morning. And if you see, if you hear it very clearly, it is very clear that this is a prayer for a spiritual master who is trying to engage in the worship of Radha and Krishna in Nikunj Leela. Okay. And in Madhuri Ras. So we see the fifth and the sixth verse of this Guru Ashtakam, the morning prayers, Mangala Arti. Madhurya Leela Rupa Guna Namnam Pratikshana Swadhana Lupasya Vande Guru Shri Charanarvinda Nikunja Yuno Ratikeli Siddhai Yayali Biryukti Apikshaniya Tatra Siddhaksa Dardi Vallabhasya Vande Guru Shri Charanarvindam. These particular verses, they are specifically for the Madhurya Leela devotees, or the spiritual master who is actually serving in the Leelas of Radha and Krishna, in the Nikunj, especially in the Nikunj Leela. And you see in the second verse of this Ashtakam, so that was Sri Radhika Madhavayur Para. Okay. And the second verse of this, Mahaprabhu Kirtana Nitya Gita Vaditra Madhyam Manusurasena Romanchikam Pashru Taranga Bhajo Vande Guru Shri Charanaravindam. So this second verse is referring to the worship of Mahaprabhu, and then how the spiritual master is actually engaged in the worship of Mahaprabhu, and then Romanchikam Pashru Taranga Bhajo, how ecstasy is developing in the body of the Guru by worshipping, participating in Gaur Leela. So we can clearly understand from this eight verses that this is a very intimate prayer, and specifically Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has written this prayer because it is meant for him. It is meant for his relationship with his guru. Now you can ask why it is then given to all of us, because we have not even, our Swarupa is not even revealed to us, and we don't even know what destination we want. The fact that we are singing the highest prayers, thinking that the Guru is the servant of Srimati Radharani, is because the highest can give the lowest also. It can give the lower, it can give us the lower forms also. But the lower form cannot give the highest form. That's why Madhurya Ras includes all other rasas. Okay, Madhurya Ras includes all other lower rasas. But the lower rasas, they will not include Madhurya Ras. And if you worship Madhurya Ras, you can also get the lower rasas. So is that clear?
Yes, Prabhu.
Okay. Aritra and Ujwala Madhuri.
Yes, Prabhuji.
Yeah, is that clear?
Yeah.
Yes, Prabhuji.
Okay, anyone has any question on this? So yeah, so the answer is for both Vaidhi and Raganuga both. It depends on the chanter, yeah. The conception.
Yes.
Okay, now this is a very interesting question. Why does Krishna's childhood pastimes especially bring about Krishna Prem more quickly than his later ages? This is, I just heard one, from Shivram Maharaj. He was addressing this question. Very interesting. Yeah, so any answer to this question? Let's see who has the answer. Okay, first of all, did you understand the question?
Prabhuji, can I take a guess?
Yeah.
Because the pastimes of Lord when he's achieved youth are like Rasleela and all. They are very difficult for the normal people to understand. Because normal people in the materialistic life may have a perverted sense of understanding. And they will not be able to digest and understand those things very easily. So maybe they are not qualified to actually easily connect with those leelas of Lord.
Okay, I definitely understand that the concern about the non-devotees. But it's not necessarily true. And we'll see how it is not necessarily true. Because even Krishna has performed pastimes as Bal Gopal. Where he is also stealing, where he is also teasing, where he is also doing a lot of mischievous things, and which I think the materialistic people, they are also bewildered by these activities of the Lord. So there is something more to that.
But is it not true that the highest leela of the Lord is the Ras Leela?
Well, definitely. I mean, yeah. With comparison to stealing at pastimes of the Lord, the Rasleela pastimes seem to be more bewildering to the materialistic and non-devotees. But certainly, there is definitely a concern. And not just about the stealing of the butter, Krishna is known as butter thief. What to speak of that. But even as a small child, he is also bewildering Brahma. Brahma is also bewildered by the Lord, by his childish activities. So there may be a doubt amongst the non-devotees that being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller owner of everything, how can he eat the remnants of his friends? And how can he also, when he's fighting with his friends, he's defeated. He wrestles with them and he's defeated by them. And so he is also doing menial services for his friends and family members. So these pastimes are certainly bewildering. It is not definitely the highest form of bewilderment is there in the Ras Leela. It's the most intimate pastime of the Lord. But I think all these other pastimes that he is performing in his Bal Leela, they are connecting us to the acceptance of his other pastimes. Okay, and probably more intimate pastimes in the later ages. Because I think, there is a connection. You cannot separate both of them. Because if you cannot accept the Bal Leela of Krishna's pastimes, then what to, how can you accept the more intimate pastimes? So, So there are, there are two reasons why, you know, Shivram Maharaj has shared, which are definitely striking. Any other guess?
No, Prabhuji.
Okay. So what he said is that the first thing, actually it was the desire and wish of Drona and Dhara that the Supreme Lord takes birth in from my womb, or he becomes my son. And secondly, she wanted that that, you know, as a son, as a child, he should bestow his mercy upon everyone, and everyone can benefit from his pastimes. That is what Drona and Dhara had desired. It was their wish that the special benevolence of the Supreme Lord in his Bal Leela pastimes be manifested. So that's why this, you know, this connection is there in their previous life, the desire of their previous life. And then obviously when the Lord is taking birth as a child, so now see, there is one very natural attraction for a child. Each and every one of us, we get attracted to a child very naturally. It's very easy for us to get connected to a child because they are very innocent. So compared to other, any other particular age, it is very easier to connect with the, with children, because they are very innocent, right? So everyone can appreciate, you know, even a demon, even a demigod, even irrespective of age, people love children. I mean, you know, definitely there are exceptions to that, you know, the way Putna came and she wanted to kill Krishna, you know, but overall, if you see, everyone will love children. So in that way, his childhood pastimes are more, they you can say that they are more merciful. And I was actually thinking one time, why our acharyas, they are specifically focusing on Damodar Ashtakam. I was thinking this for a long time. And I think this is connected to this particular answer, that we can try to connect this. Now, that's why, you know, these pastimes are more benevolent in nature. They are more merciful, and they can bestow prema quite sooner, just because of the benevolent nature of the pastime, of the childish pastimes of the Lord. Because everyone from any category can appreciate that. So definitely, see, certain childhood pastimes of Krishna are bewildering to the materialistic people. But still, now when child are doing it, when children are doing it, we can definitely understand that they are innocent to some degree. Okay, and we can just like make it something very humorous and forget about it. Okay, but if someone of an adolescent age or a youth, you know, if they perform this kind of pastime, then obviously they will be criticized. But if children are performing these pastimes, they will not be taken so much for granted. Taken so much seriously. They will be taken for granted because of the innocence that they have. So similarly, Krishna, because he wants to experience these kind of emotions and sentiments with his Brajavasi associates, he is performing all these pastimes, and that is creating lot of mercy on everyone who is able to appreciate those pastimes. Or even if they are not able to relish the pastime, at least because he is a child performing these pastimes, people just don't take it seriously, you know, and they laugh about it. They make it humorous. So that's how I think, when I think about, you know, why in the Kartik month we have this Damodar Ashtakam, the main focus, the entire month. And then we also know that we hear about how Krishna is delivering the Manigriva and Nalakuvera. And we also read about this pastime of Mother Yashoda binding the Lord. Right? So why we are focusing on that particular pastime? So I think maybe there is some connection here. Obviously, everything is connected to Srimati Radharani ultimately. The Rasika Acharyas, they have gone deep into this and they have revealed the secrets of all these pastimes and how these are connected to Radharani also. But I think this is also one of the reasons why we can think of the pastime of Krishna and Yashoda Maiya to be prominent and emphasized during the Kartik month. Yeah, I mean, does it make sense?
Prabhuji, how it is connected to Radharani, Srimati Radharani?
Yeah, it's connected to Radharani in many, many ways. You tell me, Mataji, if you have heard something about how it is connected to Radharani, how this month, Kartik month, is connected to Radharani, or how this pastime is connected to Radharani.
That's why I'm asking Prabhuji. Krishna was so young, means he was so childlike in his childhood, this pastime happened. So that time, how this pastime is connected to Radharani, that's why I'm wondering.
Yeah, so you are not aware of any one of the particular reasons how it is connected. I mean, I think devotees, they have heard from many devotees in the past. And I think we do hear a lot that how these pastimes are connected to Srimati Radharani. So maybe if any one of you, if you have heard something, you can share. In fact, I remember that one lecture that I gave in my house, Glories of Kartik Month. In that lecture, I had given many points how it is connected to Radharani. How everywhere there is Radharani in everything that we do in Kartik. So maybe one of the devotees, if they have heard something, they can share.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes, Madhuri.
Especially this Damodar Leela, when we talk about they say Yashoda Maiya was trying to bind the Lord and it was not happening. Like ultimately when Radharani comes and gives her ribbon, something, then only ultimately it could, Yashoda Maiya could bind him. And also another pastime, one time Radharani herself in the Vrindavana forest, she binds Krishna with that creepers, the binding. So these two things I remember.
Yeah. So that's a good point.
That much time it took for Yashoda Maiya is they were waiting till Radharani comes and then when she gives, that time it happens.
Okay, yeah. So this is one of the versions where we see that Radharani is herself coming and giving the rope to Yashoda Maiya, the last rope to Yashoda Maiya. And then after that, Krishna is tied up. Before that, Krishna is not tied up.
So probably, this is... Yeah, I am hearing this first time. Yes, it's amazing.
So this is one version. The second version is that, when Radharani, as you said, you also mentioned about Radharani tying Krishna with the creepers. Actually, this pastime is mentioned in Gopal Champu in Jiva Goswami's book, that how in the spiritual world, one time Radharani was waiting for Krishna and Krishna was taking a lot of time. And so then finally he came and then, I don't remember the exact pastime of this. But in any case, Radharani was upset with Krishna and then finally he tied Krishna thinking that he will not go away. Because, I remember. Now I remember, I recollect. So it was Diwali day and Krishna was supposed to meet Radharani in the forest. But Krishna came and then, first of all, he came late and then he started saying that Yashoda Maiya is calling me. I have to go because it's Diwali time. So then Radharani was very upset with him. And then she also got very angry because Krishna started saying that he just arrived and he's saying that I have to go back because Yashoda Mai is going to scold me. It's Diwali time. So then Radharani started tying him with the ropes which is connected to the first version. Or you may say that with the creepers also. So anything is okay. But I'm saying with the ropes because this same rope was used as a last rope by Yashoda Maiya to tie Krishna. Because Krishna can never be tied up by anyone else except Srimati Radharani. Krishna is bounded only by Srimati Radharani's love. That's why the last rope that Yashoda Maiya took, it was basically the rope which Radharani had used to tie Krishna. So there's a small variation in these two versions. Mataji said that Radharani came and gave that rope to Yashoda Maiya to tie Krishna. And the second version is that it was Radharani's own rope with which she had tied Krishna. So the same rope was used by Yashoda Maiya to tie Krishna. Now, you cannot tie Krishna with anyone else's rope. You require the mercy of Radharani, and the rope is actually the manifestation of the prema of Srimati Radharani. So you can say that the rope is also not different from Radharani. That's how Krishna got tied up. So the third version. Okay. So these, you know, this is how Rasik Acharyas, they go deep and they reveal. In fact, there's one thing very, very interesting. How the entire Damodar Leela, so we can understand how the Damodar Leela is actually culminating in the glorification of Srimati Radharani, because without Radharani's rope, she could not tie Krishna. So actually the Damodar Leela is culminating in the glories of Srimati Radharani. So this is how she is connected in that pastime. Second thing is that you see, it's a very amazing thing that this Satyavrata Muni, the entire pastime is about Yashoda and Krishna, and at the end of the pastime, he is inserting the name of Radharani. So what is the last verse of the Damodar Ashtakam?
Namo
Radhikaya Tvadiya Priyaya Namo Nantalilaya Devaya Tupyam Namo Radhikaya Tvadiya Priyaya Namo Nantalilaya Devaya Tupyam. Right? Why is he bringing Radharani into the picture? Where is Radharani connected in this pastime?
The same thing that first he says, like, I offer my respects to that rope. And then Radharani means the rope was given by the Radharani. And as you said, it is Radharani's representation.
Okay. Yeah. So this we understand by, so now, because we know that that rope is the manifestation of Srimati Radharani. Okay. But if someone does not know how is Radharani connected to this pastime, then how will you explain this last verse?
Another version, like when we try to understand this Ashtakam, we say like when Satyavrata Muni, one after the other, he will ask different boons from the Lord. I want to see that beautiful face, like the Gopabala face. And then when the last paragraph comes, he says like, now I want to that abdomen, which entire universe was created by Brahma, like he offers one after the other, like I don't want any of the what do you call muktis or anything, benedictions. Yeah. And then later on he comes to this and he says, the rope which has tied your abdomen, everything, like, no, which is the place for resting place for everything, that one he says. And then he comes, okay, now I know whom to catch, like to reach you. Then it is Srimati Radharani, through her only we can reach you. So one after the other, and ultimately he comes to Radharani and he accepts and he pays obeisances to Radharani. Because she is your beloved, So if we surrender unto her, and she can take us to you.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, what Satyavrata Muni was thinking is that even after offering a glorification or of Yashoda Maiya and to Krishna also, the seven verses, after praying to the Lord, begging for his mercy, if I don't get mercy even after this, then there is only one hope, and that hope is Srimati Radharani. So if Krishna has not glanced upon me, or he has not bestowed upon me after glorifying him seven times, then the last weapon I have to use, and that is Srimati Radharani's mercy. If Radharani will give mercy to me, then there is no question that Krishna will not glance upon me. So that's why he is praying to Radharani at the end. So he also understands the glorious, the supreme position of Srimati Radharani. Now see, you can definitely connect the first seven verses to the last verse, because and you can see how Radharani is actually supreme. Radharani, how she is supreme, right? She is even above Yashoda Maiya. And we can see this very clearly, that how, if nothing else is working, then what Yashoda Maiya cannot give, Radharani can give that. So this is what is actually revealed in the past time.
Yes, so like Radharani's Supreme Court.
Huh?
It's like Radharani's Supreme Court.
Yeah, she is like Supreme Court, correct. Right. Yeah. Then, you know, we are offering lamps in Kartik. So, again, it's connected to Radharani. How it is connected? How is the offering of lamps connected to Radharani? No one? Okay, how is Diwali connected to Radharani? Rajiv Prabhu, do you remember? I think you were present during the class. Okay. Vinita Mataji, any guess?
No, Prabhuji, I'm not.
Yeah, so this is a transcendental ocean. The more you dive deep into it, the more you will become lost. So the reason we offer lamps, because the lamps are also Radharani. Because Radharani, one meaning of Radharani is Deepadatri, Deepakatri. There are two meanings. In the Radharani Sahasranam, Thousand Names of Srimati Radharani, there is the name of Radharani, which is Deepdatri and Deepkatri. Okay, so this Deepa also is actually representative of Srimati Radharani. How it is connected to Diwali, the day of Diwali? No answer? Okay, this answer is because Radharani is also the representation. I mean, Diwali is also the representative of Srimati Radharani. How? Because one of the names of Radharani is Kartiki Amavasya Cha. So Kartiki Amavasya is another name of Srimati Radharani. So this incident happened on Diwali. And Diwali is actually Srimati Radharani.
Okay, so this is the name of Radharani. Amavasya cha means what?
Kartiki Amavasya.
Kartiki Amavasya, okay.
Okay, so...
Amavasya would mean moonless, dark night. Whereas Radharani is so effulgent. So why? I mean,
is okay. So I was expecting this because you may think that Amavasya is generally a dark moon day, no moon day, and everything is dark. I think there is a very logical answer for this also, and probably I think you may be able to guess this. Okay, who is dark?
Krishna.
So you got the answer.
Oh, so she takes a name from Krishna.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, see, whatever is dark, whatever is black, is the manifestation of Krishna for Radharani. And that's why, even if you remember, in our Vrindavan ISKCON temple also, we have a Tamal Krishna tree, which is standing right opposite the glance of Srimati Radharani, right? And I have also explained that time why this Tamal Krishna tree is there. Because Radharani is so absorbed in Krishna's love that even if Krishna is right besides her, she... sometimes because of her ecstasy, sometimes because of her emotions, sentiments, she will feel that Krishna is separated. And when she sees that, she will at least see the Tamal tree and she will know that Krishna is still present with me. So that Tamal tree, anything which is black, anything which is Ghanashyam or which is dark, that reminds Radharani of Sri Krishna. Okay, that's how she is specified. So... yeah, so this is the thing. And obviously, Radharani definitely would like to name herself on the things which are connected to Krishna. So Amavasya, Kartik Amavasya is the name, one of the names of Srimati Radharani. Okay, so I think we can continue with other questions because it will become a Kartik class. I think I've elaborately discussed certain points in my Glories of Kartik class. And I think that maybe I have shared this with other devotees also. I don't remember that. It was a class last year or last to last year. So I have also spoken about how Govardhan Leela is connected to Srimati Radharani and... how other things are also connected to Radharani, like that. Okay. Okay, this is one question I would like to skip because I think, I am not sure if devotees have heard about this, anything about this. I think it may require some kind of background knowledge also. So I will skip this question. And I will come to this question of the relative locations of Goloka, Vraj, Shvetadvip and Dwarka. I mean, this is also... one thing we have to understand in this question that this question is basically asking about the location or the position of Goloka Vraj, Shvetadip and Dwarka in the spiritual world. But one thing we have to understand that spiritual world is not limited. It is unrestricted and it is unlimited. So although we may temporarily define certain relative positions of these locations, but in reality, and just because of the fact that we know that the spiritual world also expands and also contracts, right? So there is no fixed, for the material senses, we can perceive it that, okay, here we have a geographical location, like we have here Mathura, we have here Vraj, and we have here Dwarka. We somehow try to identify with the geographical location. But in the spiritual world, although there is a understanding of a location in terms of relative position of these places, but this thing can change anytime because it is unlimited. That is what we have to understand. Now, first of all, the material itself, what world itself seems unlimited. It seems infinite. But there is an end to the material world, and we say that material world is just 1/4 of the entire creation, and 3/4 is actually the spiritual world. Now again, this 1/4 is unlimited, and 3/4 is also unlimited. So now how do you calculate this ratio of 3:4 and 1:4? It is inconceivable. It is achinta bheda bhed. Okay, so that we have to understand that although the geographical location is restricted as per our senses, but the material, the spiritual world itself is actually expanding, and it is all encompassing. It includes everything. Like it is said that a small portion or the corner of, like Prabhupada said that one of the small corners of Seva Kunj has the entire universes in itself. Okay, so now we say that there is a Choryasi Crores Vraj. 84 crores of Vraj, okay, which is geographically restricted, and here we are saying that the one of the corner of the of Seva Kunj, entire universes are within that corner. It is containing the entire creation, right? So these are transcendental phenomena, and these are achintya bhedavet tattva. So it is basically described in the Shastra that in Goloka, Gokul is the center where Radha and Krishna are married. Radha and Krishna are married. And then surrounding that is Vrindavan, where they are unmarried. And then surrounding that is Mathura, and then surrounding that is Dwarka. But I think on the right side of Goloka, it is mentioned it is Dwarka, and on the left side is Mathura, something like that. And then Shvetadip is surrounding that portion. So these are theoretical descriptions, but again, the conception is that all these places, they can expand unlimitedly. So how do you connect them? You know, it's something which is beyond our senses. Yeah. Okay. Any questions on this?
Hare Krishna, okay. Babaji, not to question on this. Just I want to ask, if someone is attached to service and he know everything about Krishna, but he don't have this knowledge and philosophy, so the soul will not go to Goloka? Not attend the Goloka, Prabhuji?
Yeah, so I never said that if someone does not have this knowledge, they will not go to Goloka. I just said that these are like interesting questions, but amongst them, So this particular question about the relative position of Goloka and all, that's a technical question. I mean, we don't require to know that. These are all revealed to us. And I think we'll understand it much better and completely when these things are revealed to us. instead of we trying to understand with our limited material intelligence. Okay, so these questions, they are not so important for us, but questions connected to our sadhana, which help us to advance in our spiritual life, these are necessary. These we must know.
Yeah, I mean that means the whole philosophy, not about this question particular about this. What I means it's not easy to understand whole philosophy for everyone. So that's my concern. That's my question, Prabhuji.
Yeah, that's a good question actually. And see, again, now coming to the we had also heard from Giriraj Maharaj that on one hand, we have some liberal standards to go back to Godhead. You know, Prabhupada himself said that just chant 16 rounds, follow regulative principles, you go back to Godhead. On the other hand, Prabhupada also made statements like, it was so many times Prabhupada said, if you read Prabhupada letters, and the entire purpose of writing Prabhupada books is that he wanted that devotees, they should read the books. So, and many times he has repeatedly emphasized this point that chant 16 rounds regularly, attentively, offenselessly, follow the regulative principles strictly, and read my books thoroughly, scrutinizingly, carefully, systematically. Prabhupada said so many times this point. Okay, and then finally Prabhupada said that if you do this, then all the answers from all the questions will be answered from within. And sometimes he also said that Krishna will personally answer your questions. So now the question is that if devotees, they don't have knowledge, and or let's say there are devotees, especially maybe devotees from the older generation or devotees who are elder, you know, they don't have this capacity of knowing things. And maybe there are some devotees, in spite of their age, they are not inclined to gathering so much information. In spite of that, they are more inclined towards service. As Mataji was saying that if someone would like to do service, then how do we understand? So see, there is a concept which is required. Sambandh Gyan. So Sambandh Gyan is definitely necessary. So you should know who is Krishna, who are the living entities, the relationship between the Lord, the living entities, the material world, what is the material world, how it is connected, how it functions, the transcendental potency of the Lord, the inconceivable potency of the Lord. How do you understand all these things? You can only understand these things when you have an idea about it. So that's how you understand the Supreme Lord. No one can understand the Supreme Lord completely, but to the degree you surrender to the Supreme Lord, to that degree he will reveal himself to you. That means that you will realize and understand many things, many truths about the Supreme Lord. Right? The question that you are asking is also connected to why Parikshit Maharaj is asking so many questions to Sukhdev Goswami when he is about to die in 7 days. And I don't think anyone would like to waste time on so many different topics. Straight away, they would probably go and hear Krishna Leela. So why Parikshit Maharaj is bothering to ask so many questions to Sukhdev Goswami? And one of the questions is about the description of the material world, how the material world is functioning. Right? So the answer Sukhdev Goswami gives to Parikshit Maharaj is that this information is also required, it's also needed, because being an energy of the Lord, it is not different from the Lord. So one must try to understand this also. And so it is not just about the internal potency of the Lord, but the external potency also. How Maya is working, how Krishna has created the universe. So we may have some defects, or we may not be able to digest, understand many things. But I will tell you one thing. I think it requires... I think devotees have to accept this fact that they have to be determined. They have to put efforts also. They cannot do away with the efforts. So if you are not able to understand certain topics, it is your duty to clarify that with some superior devotee. And if you don't do it, then you are just ignoring that. So these are essential topics. These are essential topics which are required. And I think devotees, they have to understand it properly as much as possible, you know. At least the process of executing Krishna consciousness to the degree that we don't commit offenses, that is also important. So that much knowledge definitely one must have. So see, it's not just about service. You may serve and you may offend also. You may serve, but you do not know how to serve, when to serve, how much to serve, whom to serve. If you don't know these things, your service is actually on a mental level, on a sentimental level. So you must know how much to serve, whom to serve, when to serve, where to serve, how to serve. All these questions should be well defined. I mean, we must know the answers to these questions. Okay. And it also includes the understanding of philosophical concepts. Because see, here it is not about any particular sampradaya, any particular acharya. We are talking about Shastra. Shastra is not different from the Lord. And Srimad Bhagavatam specifically, it is not meant for, you know, I mean, Sukadeva Goswami did not speak just for the sake of Parikshit Maharaj. Or neither Prabhupada wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam, commented on the Bhagavatam for Prem Rasdas or any other devotee. He wanted every devotee to make sure that they understand and they have read all the books. Basically, all these important shastras. Okay, Prabhupada definitely wanted that. So I think there are two possibilities here. That if you want to go back to Godhead, you must. So there are two ways here, two possibilities. That either you must realize this knowledge. Like, you know, like for example, if you have performed bhakti in the past life, then when you come in this life, many things are natural to you, very natural to you. Like you will understand straightforwardly. You will not have any doubt about it. And your mind will be able to grasp it. Just because in the past life, you had acquired knowledge, you followed the process. And in this life, you come and you realize certain things on your own. And then you read in the Shastra and you reconfirm. Okay. So this is called revelation. And another path is efforts. So unless and until you realize knowledge, you cannot go back to Godhead. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he was illiterate. But he knew the tattva about Krishna entirely. He used to hear from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So if one cannot read and understand, then one can at least hear from those who know. And at least they can understand the tattva, and that's how they can actually realize the knowledge. So the realization was there because they were hearing. Maybe they were not reading the books that time. I mean, there's no concept of book reading probably so much, but because obviously the fact that the printing presses were not there so much, and you know, now it has become a worldwide phenomenon that we have everything in record. So that time it was not so important because, you know, devotees by their potency, they used to grasp and they used to remember things, whatever they used to hear. So they have heard from senior devotees and they have realized that knowledge. So unless you realize, you actually cannot go back to Godhead because realization is very important. So you may ignore acquiring knowledge, but then you have to be realized. In the sense that knowledge should come from within. You don't have to put effort for that. Okay. So now, if you remember, you know, one example that I quoted from Prabhupada Leela, which we have discussed earlier, that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was sharing that Prabhupada had two approaches. He used to spend 4 hours every day reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And at the same time, many things were revealed to him by Krishna also directly. Right? So Tamal Krishna Maharaj was making a point that Prabhupada was on two paths, a path of revelation and the path of efforts. That's how, you know, he was a self-realized person. So similarly, the more realized we are, the more we are deeply connected with the Lord. Okay. And the more we can give the Lord to others also. Right? So, as per your capacity, you have to acquire knowledge. You have to clarify. That's very important. See, what devotees they will do? They will try to acquire knowledge. But when they don't understand certain things, they will give it up. And that's not done. So they have to ask someone, they have to approach someone and they have to clarify it. If you still cannot understand, then you just pray to the Supreme Lord to reveal these things to you, because our intellectual capacity is also limited. So we pray to the Lord for His mercy. And so there are certain important elements that one must know, and then maybe there are certain detailed elements which probably they are not required, and maybe they will be revealed with time. Okay, but as far as possible, we should strive to acquire knowledge and we should clarify doubts. That's the entire process of Krishna consciousness. And that's how we also get the conviction, and then we can, with that conviction, we can also give it to others. Unless we are free from doubts, we cannot give to others. Right? So this is an ongoing process. Now, even for me also, like, you may probably think that, okay, I've got a lot of knowledge, but I understand that my knowledge is also very limited. I have to, there is an ocean and I have to learn so many things, you know. So no one can say that one has acquired knowledge completely. That is not possible. But the most important tattva, because Krishna says that, emamyoveti taktvata, taktvadayam punarjanma, naitimapetis arjuna. Without understanding me in tattva or in truth, one cannot go back to Godhead. So only janma karma chama e divyam evam yo vidhi taktvata. So only after knowing the transcendental tattva about my appearance and disappearance, one can leave the material world and come to me. Right? So this is the thing. So is that clear, Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji, it's clear. But just I want to ask about myself only. Just in my young age, I can say that I was so much able to remember at once only. But as I means going, I'm growing more old, but, and I came in Krishna consciousness very late. I was 50 years when I came, but my memory is very short, Prabhuji. I'm not able to quote the shlokas at that time. I get recollect that, yeah, there's some shloka is there, but not able to collect.
Mataji, it is the recitation of shloka is immaterial. It is not required. Why you have to learn shlokas? That is not required at all. Without reciting shlokas, see, this is the problem. I think there is one, this was Keshav Bharati Maharaj. So one time he was addressing some devotees and he was making this point that in today's devotees generation, devotees are thinking that scholarship is equivalent to quoting shlokas and trying to prove one's scholarship in terms of how much they know. But I would say that this is, and Keshav Bharati Maharaj was actually saying this point, that this is actually not so important. What is important is, and this is my own conviction also, that what is actually really important is to understand the basics, is to understand the concept. Like, you know, like for example, even in the material world, when we are going to school, college, our focus should have been into learning the basics, understanding the concepts. If you are able to understand that, then there is no necessity of mugging up things. This is, unfortunately, we have been doing, you know, we did that in our school and college days. But now we realize that actually this was a faulty process. This is absolutely, you know, I mean, it did not have any advantage. In fact, we had to go back to the basics. You know, when I did my master's, I had to go back to the basics and then again refer to my master studies. So I was spending more time in that. And this is what we have to understand, that focus on the basics. So whatever we are discussing here, see, I am also not quoting so many shlokas, because the goal is not to recite shlokas. My focus is how I can best make devotees understand certain principles, the conceptions, you know, that is actually my focus. And with regards to that, I am doing my study. If I wanted, I could have memorized. I will tell you one thing. See, when I gave my GRE, I was the only one student in KP Singh's class. Now, KP Singh is a very extremely popular English teacher in English coach in the GRE classes. If you during our time, he was the best for GRE coach, as a coach, you know. So he, you know, when I was taking coaching from KP Singh's class, I was confronted with him face to face. And in I don't know if devotees know this, but in GRE we are supposed to know the meanings of 5,000 words, at least 5,000 words. Okay, and it is guaranteed that whenever they have that exam, English exam, some of these words will definitely come. In fact, all the questions will come only from this 5,000 list of words. Okay, so it was the Barron's dictionary, or I don't remember what it was called, but the Barron's book had a list of 5,000 words, English words, and we had to memorize all of those words, especially those which were unfamiliar with us. Okay, and you know, that time I had taken a vow that I will remember all these 5,000 words, and whoever will ask me from anywhere, I will quote it immediately. What is the meaning of that? And I did that. In a confrontation with KP Singh, he asked me 4 to 5 meanings of 4 to 5 words, and spontaneously I answered them. So he appreciated me like anything in front of everyone. Okay, he said that you are ultimate. You have reached a certain level. Okay, so see, my focus that time was to score well in the GRE by mugging up all these 5,000 words. And at the same time, also show off that how much I know, you know, so that others will feel that kind of inferior complexity. But now I can do the same thing here also. I know that if I sit with the sloka book, and I have a sloka book also, which I had purchased maybe around 7-8 years back. And I had the same intention that I want to defeat all the devotees in my scholarship. So I started that book. And I was going, so that book has, it is called Selected Verses from Scriptures, and it has the slokas from the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, all the major and the most famous slokas from these three scriptures. I had decided that I am going to learn each and every sloka, and I will quote each and every sloka. But then later on I realized with time that this is actually a wrong approach, and I think I will be wasting a lot of time trying to learn the slokas and trying to present to others. Instead of that, let me focus on the principles and concepts of our scriptures, and let me present that. Let me try to explain that. So I focused. So last 7-8 years, I have been focusing on that. In spite of sometimes I do feel that okay, I should have learned certain main slokas, but still I don't feel so much about it. Because I know that I can, at least if I don't know the exact sloka, but at least I know the English translation of that sloka, and I can, and definitely I can quote that from anywhere. That is not a problem for me. Okay. So don't think that you have to learn certain things in order to become scholarly. You have to focus on the concepts. You have to focus on the tattva. If you know the tattva, then you will be fixed up. You will be able to answer all these questions. You will not have doubts. Okay? So is that okay, Mataji?
Yes, okay, Mataji. just about to mean, suppose, yes, Prabhupada's mission is to preach. So sometimes I feel that I am not completely fitting in Prabhupada's teaching missions. That's my concern, Prabhuji.
Actually, Mataji, see, I understand what you're saying. So there are devotees. See, ultimately what we have observed is that every devotee has their own nature and they want to stick to their nature. Especially when it comes to preaching, I think there is a fear amongst devotees, some of the devotees who have never spoken in front of everyone or probably not even tried to attempt to preach to a few people also. So they have probably a fear factor in them. And if that is not there, then at least I think because of their own nature of that introvertness, I think they are not able to open up and they are not able to share this message. So, see, I can just tell you one thing that it's not necessary that you have to preach on a big level, on a bigger level, or to so many devotees. You can even preach one-on-one. And it's not even necessary that you preach to completely unknown people. You can start preaching your relatives or anyone whom you know, and you think that they will be able to hear you or they will be able to appreciate what you are saying. Okay. So first of all, obviously, we need to know who has the faith and who is open to hear. So if you find someone like that, and if you know that person, then I think you'll be comfortable to share something. The problem comes in devotees, they start thinking that, okay, preaching means what if I start speaking to another person and the first tendency is that, okay, what if I'm unable to convince that person or what if I'm unable to give proper reasonings and logics. So see, one thing is that you have to learn first. If you have doubts, then you have to learn and you have to clarify the doubts. Although Prabhupada said that whatever you know, you can preach. So the process is that there is no particular time when you start preaching. Preach right from the beginning. Whatever you know, you just start preaching to others. But at the same time, you have to also learn because you have to upgrade your knowledge. If tomorrow, people will come and question you, then you should be able to answer that. Otherwise, they will think that this person does not know anything. So that should not discourage you. So the process is that simultaneously you preach and you also acquire knowledge and you clarify your doubts also. Okay. So it's not that, okay, only after you become realized or after you are thorough with everything, then only you start preaching. And that time will never come because one cannot be thorough with anything. Completely. Okay. So you must start. So you must start from somewhere. And if you start with one person, and if that person will start showing interest, then it will inspire you to preach to the next person. And if okay, that person, yeah. So basically you start with someone whom you know. If you do that, then you will get inspiration and then gradually you start speaking to outsiders also. See, because you will realize one thing, when you preach to someone and the person will accept that knowledge or he will start appreciating, then you will think that, okay, this knowledge is beneficial for so many people. Why I am preserving that? And you will also be happy that others are accepting it and it is beneficial for them. You will get that feeling of happiness and satisfaction. So when you get that kind of happiness, then you want to share with more others also, not just restrict to one or two, but you will start sharing with others. So you start from one person and then you see gradually you will be able to do it. And it is not necessary that if you are not comfortable in a particular language to speak, you can speak in a language which is most convenient and comfortable to you. You can become a preacher in that language, and you can expand and grow your preaching in that particular language and culture. So it is not just restrict. You don't have to be restricted about that. You have to expand that ability. So you can start that with, you know, if you're comfortable in Hindi or in Sindhi language, then you start doing that. And you will definitely see the result, you know, that happiness and satisfaction, you will see that. So, okay, another way is that in spite of all these things, if you still are not able to preach, if you still don't want to preach somehow, then there is an indirect way to preaching, which is that you, whatever talents you have, whatever special talents you have, you engage those talents in Krishna's service. You take some responsibility for Krishna's service. And it does not mean you have to directly interact with the people or you have to directly preach to them. You can, like, for example, if you love cooking, then help in cooking devotees, distributing prasadam during the time of corona, during the time of preaching. I mean, you can, if devotees are conducting preaching program, help them go there and cook for all these people. So cooking is also preaching. So it can be book distribution, it can be cooking, it can be cleaning, you know, when there is a preaching program. So there are, prasadam is served, and then obviously the entire area has to be thoroughly cleansed. And then the utensils should be cleansed also. So you can, whichever talent Krishna has given you, you just engage that. And you think how deeply it will contribute in society to others, how they will become Krishna conscious. So that's an indirect way of preaching also. Okay, so yes, these are all the possibilities.
Yeah, I want to just tell you, inform you that I started to tell Bhagavad Gita in Hindi to some of my close ones. They are my circle only. So around there are 20. I am started that on Zoom.
Wonderful. Good.
Yeah. That's yeah, good. I don't know. Somehow it started and it happened. And in fact, they are like, they are very much attached. They became so much attached to that, that they are telling that we are waiting for that 3 days. I'm taking that classes 3 days a week. I'm doing that classes. And they are so much attached that they are calling me that when will you start the class like that. And I'm taking the classes in Hindi because Hindi is very comfortable to me. And by the means, blessings of Prabhupada, and that's just Prabhupada gave everything in the plate. We have to just tell them this is biryani, this is idli, this is dosa, like that, Prabhupada. It's really, yeah. Prabhupada, very much mercy. I mean, no words for Prabhupada, Prabhupada. It's really. And so just whenever I need your help, I will give you a call, Prabhuji. Whenever I will need help, Prabhuji. Just now I started with Bhagavad Gita, and I am an introduction only. I started from introduction only, and they are liking it, Prabhuji, because this is very new concept for them. Earlier they said that whenever we took the Gita, we just started with shloka and we got it boring. But now the way you are telling us, it's very different and it's very attractive.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So you can use your intelligence and ideas and everything, how to present it, and can cultivate that.
So, yes, Prabhuji, definitely. I need your prayers and blessings, and I need your help also sometime, Prabhuji. So that's why.
Well, if you are doing so nicely, then I think I need your blessings and prayers. So that may, I may try to Prabhuji. Do something.
It would be a big joke.
No, nothing like that. I am also learning, you know, from devotees. So I have certain goals which I have not yet started with. So definitely, yeah. So we can all inspire each other, and we should get attached to taking responsibility for Prabhupada, and it can be in different ways.
In fact, Prabhupada gave everything. Means just we have to recite like a parrot. I compare the Bhagavad Gita's other Bhagavad Gita's and Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada gave so much.
Prabhupada gave everything, and you can just imagine how much the disciples of Prabhupada also gave us. Not just Prabhupada, but they have given the Acharyas also, the Goswamis also. Everything is available to us readily.
Yes, Prabhuji. Means yes, there's a 30 people are there in group, and around 25, nearly 20 to 25, they are attending seriously.
Oh, okay. Great.
I don't know what will be in the future, but just praying to Krishna and Prabhupada.
I think I should also join your classes now?
No, Prabhuji, I will be speechless.
No. I will also learn many things.
No, Prabhuji, you already know so many things. We learn so much from you only, Prabhuji.
Yeah. 2025 is a huge number, you know, like it's a wonderful thing.
No, Prabhuji, because all are new, Prabhuji. All are new. We are doing Harinam Kirtan, means that Ekadash, actually we started doing monthly Kirtan first. So I don't know if this is the seed already in their heart, and it's now, right, it's now coming out like it's sprouting. So maybe that Krishna's mercy is also there. So now they are ready to understand and they are getting some taste in that.
Good, Madhari. Good, wonderful. These are all attending from India or outside?
No, Prabhuji, all are Vijayawada only. Means these all are Vijayawada only, from my city.
Oh, okay.
Mostly, yeah.
Okay. Nice, Madhari. Good.
And so, they all are Sindhi. And they all are well Hindi spoken. I also love to say something in Hindi. That's my favorite language, Mother.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, you whatever, see, in the best capacity, whatever you can do, you can cultivate that. It's not necessary you have to learn any new language, or you know, you can just be an expert in your area and you can cultivate that for you.
And I'm telling them Leelas also, that's why they are so much attracted. I'm telling some part of Bhagavad Gita, then some Prabhupada, something about Prabhupada, and telling them something, some Krishna's Leela or Krishna's pastimes or something like that. So yeah.
That's good.
Because nowadays everyone likes story more than philosophy. They prefer stories on the more than philosophy.
Actually, one thing is there. Yeah, it may be true that people may like stories or leelas, but I think over a period of time, those who are liking only stories or leelas, they will not become devotees, and maybe the goal is not clear to them actually. They have some ulterior motive. If people like only Leela, then there is some problem. So, see, the thing is that they should be able to accept the philosophy also.
Yes.
That is extremely important. There's a foundation of Krishna consciousness.
But one thing is good, I can say, that right now they are ready to accept that Krishna is our eternal father. Just they are understanding this thing. That Krishna is our eternal father.
Yeah, so obviously that means they are convinced of certain principles also. Not just, on a sentimental platform, but if they, either probably you must have explained to them, or maybe that's their own conviction, because people are coming from different backgrounds in India, and most of them are attached to different demigods, and some of them are naturally attached to Krishna also from the beginning. And they feel that Krishna is actually the supreme God. Yes. So if they don't have that conviction, then we can explain to them. Otherwise, they may themselves have that conviction.
Yes. At least many of them are convinced that Krishna is our eternal father.
Yeah. So now, see, that's step one. So if one thing is achieved, now the next thing achieved, the next achievement is how well you connect them with Prabhupada and the Parampara. That's the biggest challenge, because Prabhupada, when they read Prabhupada books, they will feel that, why Prabhupada is so much chastising, or he is minimizing the position of the demigods, and why he is calling them demigods, why Prabhupada is saying this, why Prabhupada is saying that, how do we connect in this particular context, in this particular circumstances, in this particular generation, whatever Prabhupada is saying, you know, he's saying from the traditional authority of the scriptures, but how Prabhupada, you know, in this time and period, how do we connect with that? So these are the challenges that we have to face, because otherwise people have a general idea about Krishna and they know the leelas of Krishna also, especially in India. So it's not a big thing to explain to them the leelas of Krishna, or say that how Krishna is the supreme. Okay, that is accepted. But now the real challenge is, how do you how you know they should be able to be connected to the Parampara Acharya also, and they should be able to accept the teachings of the Acharya.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Ujjwala Mataji also has got a lot of experience in this, so she may be a better person to advise you. He has been preaching since a long time.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Anyways, but I think we can discuss this later also about you know, I mean, if devotees are interested, we can definitely have a special class on how to preach, and we can try to learn from each other experiences and all.
Yes.
Yeah. But okay, so we were discussing about the relative locations of Golok Braj and Svetadimna. Okay, and I think, yeah, you had asked the question about what if someone does not have knowledge. So we had a elaborate discussion on that. Okay, I think it's time to wind up now. I think we are much beyond our timings. So some questions are left out. Maybe we can try to cover in the next class. I just wanted to request everyone to please continue the prayers for Bhakti Charu Maharaj. We all, in fact, I was actually thinking of doing Harinam Sankirtan on Zoom today, but I think I just got late. I just felt that maybe, like, you know, if devotees, they will not be able to attend on time, then we'll miss that time. So probably, let's see.
We can
do next time, but I wish and pray that everyone will pray for Bhakti Charu Maharaj. Continue praying for him.
So, Prabhuji, what is the current situation?
I just heard that he is stable, but not free from. I mean, he's still critical, so not like completely out of danger. And that's why they are seeking the prayers and prayers of all the devotees. So he is still not completely out of that critical situation. Okay, all right. So we can. Ujjwala Mataji, I will stop the recording now. And I hope it will be directly saved in the cloud.
Yeah. Yes, Prabhuji.
Okay, and you can share the audio link.
Yeah. Okay, Prabhuji.
Thank you very much for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanu Pranam.
Hare Krishna. 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 Hare Krishna.